Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard all the evidence. I submit that this was not a hot-blooded crime of passion. Consider this. A revolver holds 6 bullets, not 8. That means that he fired the gun empty and then stopped to reload.
By the power vested in me by the state of Maine, I hereby order you to serve 2 life sentences back to back, 1 for each of your victims. So be it.
Send you here for life? That's exactly what they take.
I believe in 2 things. Discipline.
Help me!
And the Bible. Here you'll receive both.
Andy came to Shawshank Prison in 1947. Why'd you do it?
I didn't, since you asked.
You can fit right in. I must admit, I didn't think much of Andy the first time I laid eyes on him. He had a quiet way about him. Walk and a talk that just wasn't normal around here.
There are places in the world that aren't made out of stone. There's something inside they can't touch.
What are you talking about?
Hope.
Let me tell you something, my friend. Hope is a dangerous thing.
Damn it, Dufresne, you're putting me behind.
Hope can drive a man insane.
You better be sick or dead in there, I kid you not.
Used to that idea.
Oh, my holy God.
I guess it comes down to a simple choice, really. Get busy living, you get busy dying.
Get busy living, or get busy dying. That's damn right.
Well, good morning. How many of you have seen the movie Shawshank Redemption? It's a powerful movie. It's one of my all-time favorite movies. In fact, even in preparing for this message, I watched it a couple times. I've seen it over 12 times. And every time I see it, I always see something new in the movie, profound, profound movie. Again, it's my all-time favorite movie. It's really a tale, for those that haven't seen it, it's a tale of hope in the midst of despair, of salvation on the other side of suffering. It tells the story of a man named Andy Dufresne, who's played by the actor Tim Robbins. He's a successful banker who's condemned to Shawshank Prison for the murder of his wife and her lover. It's kind of a hard movie to watch, and if you haven't seen it, I don't recommend you watch it with your kids. It doesn't blink at the horrors, if you will, as you watch the movie, at the horrors of incarceration. In fact, I think that's what makes it such a powerful, powerful movie, because it gives you insight using the backdrop of this Shawshank prison. It gives you the insight into suffering, gives you insight into the human condition at times. Kind of from the depths of depravity, as you watch this movie, Andy, played by Tim Robbins, faces this insurmountable odds of living the life of a prisoner. Here he is. Can you imagine, as you watch this movie, he's falsely accused. To the heights of redemption he goes, and he tries to teach. As you watch this movie, he tries to teach Red, who's played by Morgan Freeman, and who narrates the movie. We all love Morgan Freeman's voice. Who narrates the movie? And by the way, Larry wanted me to try doing Morgan Freeman's voice, and I'm just not going to do that. That would be embarrassing. And I was going to have actually Larry come up and do it, but his sounded like Forrest Gump when he did it. So I want this message to go really well. So I just want to apologize for. But Morgan Freeman, it's a powerful movie. And Andy tries to teach him the power of hope. And all the time we get a glimpse into this movie at what it means, I think, more than anything, to be human. And maybe more than that, what it means to live with hope in the midst of depravity and suffering, and tests and trials. I love what a pastor, as we think about hope this morning, we think about suffering, we think about hope, and the need we have for that to be infused into our life. I think about a pastor in Los Angeles who says something really powerful about hope. This is what he says. He says, "Your soul cannot live without a belief in the future. You were designed for hope." Let's say that sentence. You were designed for hope. Your soul needs hope like your body needs water. Here's one thing I know about every individual here in this room this morning, that we are all people of hope. We live by hope. I mean, you think about it, people go to school and they, what? They hope to graduate. After they graduate, they hope to get a job. For those of you that are single, for those of you that are married, when you were single, you hoped to get married one day. And then you got married, and then you hoped to have kids in the house. And then you got kids in the house, and then you hoped for the day that they would leave the house, right? We all hope. And I think hope comes like in two flavors. As we think about the movie, I want to think through that lens. We think through suffering, we think through hope, and hope is such a powerful, powerful virtue, powerful, powerful word that needs to be a part of our vocabulary. But as we think about hope, I think it comes in two flavors. There is hope in something, and then there is hope in someone. When we have hope in something, we're kind of expecting and hoping for a certain outcome. You know, I hope I get that job. I hope I get that house. Or maybe for some, I hope I get that girl. I hope I get that girl and she gets that job and we get that house. I hope, right? See, one day, the truth is that our hopes will eventually disappoint us. Every circumstance, individuals that we have a lot of love and trust in, they'll disappoint us and frustrate us. Hope for us at times will, maybe there are things around us that wear out, give out, kind of fail, fall apart, melt down, and go away. And at that point, there's got to be hope in something deeper and more foundational, something or someone that we can hope in. In the movie Shawshank Redemption, you have two characters, Andy Dufresne, who goes through prison for 19, I think it was like 19 years, is in prison, falsely accused. Can you imagine? I love the movie because when they tell the story, they tell it, it's such extreme example, as an extreme example. That here you have Andy Dufresne, who is trying to teach Red the power of hope. And then you have Red, played by Morgan Freeman, who is looking through the lens of suffering and pain, and hope is not a commodity or a virtue that he will hold as something important. And you'll see throughout the course of the movie as you watch it again, and you will see that there is this dialogue, this debate, this discourse around this notion of hope. For Red, hope is a dangerous thing. Let's take a look at this clip for a moment.
Hey, look who's here.
Maestro.
And you couldn't play something good, huh? Hank Williams or something?
They broke the door down before I could take requests.
Was it worth it? 2 weeks in the hall?
Easiest time I ever did.
Oh, there's no such thing as easy time in the hall.
That's right, a week in the hall is like a year.
Damn straight.
I had Mr. Mozart to keep me company.
So they let you tote that record player down there, huh?
It's in here. In here. That's the beauty of music. They can't get that from you. Haven't you ever felt that way about music?
Well, I played a mean harmonica as a younger man. Lost interest in it, though. Didn't make much sense in here.
Here's where it makes the most sense. I need it so you don't forget.
Forget?
Yeah, forget that there are places in the world that aren't made out of stone, that there's something inside that they can't get to, that they can't touch. It's yours.
What are you talking about?
Hope.
Hope. Let me tell you something, my friend. Hope is a dangerous thing. Hope can drive a man insane. It's got no use on the inside. You better get used to that idea.
Like Brooks did.
Here, Red says, hope is a dangerous thing. Hope will drive a man insane. See, to Andy, to go through life and to quit and not hope is to start dying. It's interesting, if you watch this scene again, when you go back to it, watch it, and you'll see at the table, he sits down, and he's got this rhythm to him, this excitement. He was just in the hole for like a month. And he's living and looking through a different lens as you watch this movie. And you see at the table, like, everyone thinks he's kind of kidding about this notion of hope and this notion of something that he's holding on to and looking through a different lens than everyone else. And you see at that kind of like pivotal point where like Red realizes, played by Morgan Freeman, he realizes like he's serious. And here he's trying to coach and trying to help Andy realize like, hey, the lens I'm looking through is more realistic. You need to lower your expectations because hope, as he would say, will drive a man insane. See, we are people of hope. Here's what the Apostle Paul, as we think about this movie, this backdrop of this movie, and we also think about what the scripture has to say to us. As Paul, he's writing to those in Rome, and he's writing to the Romans, and he writes this to them, very simply and profound statement. He says this, in this hope, we are saved. Now, he's not just talking about in this notion of hope, just hope in general. You know, this notion of like wishful thinking or something like that, or just being optimistic, even though being optimistic is important, he's talking about something more powerful. See, hope, through the lens of Paul, as he writes two-thirds of the New Testament, and he was dealing with suffering and trials, and he was dealing with insurmountable odds, and he writes, in this hope we are saved, for him, hope is this conviction that he believed that God came down through the person of Jesus Christ, and through that, the best is yet to come. Paul goes on to write this. He says this in the book of Romans. He doesn't just stop with, in this hope we are saved. He also says, in Romans chapter 8, he says, I consider that our present sufferings, and see, Paul knew something about suffering. And as we think about this movie, I mean, Andy's going through the same suffering everyone else is going through. Paul says, I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. You see, it's this hope that the Apostle Paul could face overwhelming odds in the midst of despair, depravity, in the midst of suffering, that he in the midst of it could have greatness of spirit. And it's through that hope that families and churches and relationships endure and prevail. That's what we learn through the Apostle Paul. That's what we see through the lens of Andy, who kind of walks differently, thinks differently, talks differently throughout the movie. See, this notion, as we look at Shawshank Redemption, and we hear Red, played by Morgan Freeman, where he says that hope is a dangerous thing, what we learn about the whole movie, and we soon discover the focal point of the movie, of Shawshank Redemption, is that there is this fear that can hold you prisoner, but there's this hope that can set you free. See, there's hope in spite of what's going on around us. Beyond explanation. In some ways, it lifts us above the rubble and the failures of our life and the pain and the fear to rise above what at one point may seem insurmountable. See, this notion to endure, to prevail, to kind of overcome is fueled by this innocuous ingredient called hope. Everyone say that with me this morning. Hope. Ready? One, two, three. All right. Hope. See, on the day when we allow hope to die, kind of the spiritual fire goes out, and we just start marking time. Some of you might have heard this story. A guy by the name of Ken Davis, he writes, he's a comedian, also an author, true story. He writes about a woman who one day was doing dishes, and she looked out her window in the kitchen, and she was horrified to see her German Shepherd shaking the life out of the neighbor's rabbit. Her family had been quarreling with them for some time. So this wasn't going to make, you know, matters easier for them. It was going to make matters worse. So she grabbed a broom and she jetted out the back door, jumped the fence, and began to beat the pooch until the dog let go of the rabbit. The rabbit dropped in this kind of heap of this pile, if you will, and it was extremely dead, all right? After a moment's consideration, she thought to herself, you know what? I've got a plan here. So she takes the rabbit by taking the broom and lifting it up, brings it into her house, places it into the bathtub, turns the shower on, and begins to rinse it off. One side cleans it off. The other side turns it over and cleans that side off as well. She thinks even further, you know what? I have a plan here. So what she does is she takes a hairdryer and begins to blow, true story, begins to blow dry the rabbit until he's kind of fluffy, and then takes a comb out and starts to groom the rabbit. Then, when the neighbor wasn't looking, she hopped the fence, took the rabbit, opened the cage, propped up the rabbit in the back of the cage, and looked around, and then went back over to her house, went inside, and thought, man, this plan is good. A couple hours had gone by, and all of a sudden, she heard this screaming from the neighbor whose rabbit was in the cage. She heard this screaming. She ran out of the house and looked over the fence, and her neighbor came over, and she said to her, she says, what's wrong? Kind of innocently, like she didn't know what was going on. And she's the neighbor came over to her, and you could see like all the blood has drained from the neighbor's face. She said, our rabbit, she says, our rabbit, she blubbered out. She said, he died 2 weeks ago. We buried him, and now he's back. What matter of rabbit is this that he would come back to life? But obviously he wasn't alive. Some of you are like, is he alive? No, he was just fluffed up, dead rabbit. See, I think in some ways we could relate to this. See, there's people in our world, maybe the people around us, maybe it's you, that are desperate for hope. Including people in churches who at times will come into church and fluff themselves up to look okay on the outside. But inside, their hope has died. See, whenever that happens, when an individual loses hope that he can grow and be used by God in joy, whenever maybe a spouse loses hope that a marriage can improve and be better than it is right now, or a church loses a conviction that its best days are yet to come, so you lose hope and you begin to die a little. Paul says, in this hope we are saved. See, there's a reality that Paul kind of introduces this truth to the human race. See, a lot of times we have hopes that don't pan out, right? Maybe a relationship or a marriage that fell apart. Or maybe for some of us, a job. Or maybe for some of us, we had a certain educational goal we had that we didn't reach, or an accomplishment, or maybe our health. Paul says this. He says in Romans 8:22 about this idea of hope in the midst of despair. He says, the whole of creation, all of humanity, if you will, has been groaning. He uses that word groaning to kind of elucidate this point that in the midst of despair that we get frustrated, that our hopes get frustrated, we get disappointed. He says, the whole of creation has been groaning right up to the present time. And Paul goes on to say here, as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. As in the pains of childbirth. So Paul is trying to say like this idea that, hey, in the midst of like traversing through and moving through life, we will deal with frustrations and disappointments even while we're holding on to hope. And he says that he uses a striking metaphor, as in the pains of childbirth. How much pain is in the pain of childbirth? When my wife gave birth to our first child, so we have three boys, 5.5, 3.5, and 1.5. Please pray for us. I call it like Navy SEALs boot camp, right? But when we went through childbirth class the first time, it was kind of cool. You know, our first son was, before he was born, I mean, I got to be called coach, you know, which I never got a t-shirt for. I thought I was getting a t-shirt, going there, and I'm going to be coach. And it wasn't really that fun, okay? Let's just be honest about it. But one of the things I remember is that in the childbirth class, they said you should never use the word pain. Some of you are laughing. You're like, I know, I remember that. They would not allow us to use the word pain. They would say to the woman who was pregnant, they would say, when you are giving birth, you may experience some discomfort. Some of you are like, yeah, I remember that. Right? Discomfort. Which you're like, no, it's not discomfort. It was pain, all right? Where's the cocktail, right? Discomfort. Anyone here ever experienced some discomfort in this world? Sure. Maybe you're feeling uncomfortable right now. I'm not sure. It's a striking thing that Paul uses this metaphor to articulate to his brothers and sisters in Rome that are dealing with frustrations, disappointments, suffering. See, sometimes I think that people, when they think about the Christian experience, I think that some folks, in reality, maybe theologically they don't believe this, but emotionally and functionally they believe that I'm exempt, if you will, from disappointments. If I'm following Jesus and I feel like I'm doing all the right things, that maybe all my prayers should get answered just the way I want. Or my life ought to be pleasant. Or I always should get the job that I want to and it should go really well. My relationship should be fulfilling. In some ways, maybe my work should be meaningful. My stewardship should always be rewarded. My serving should be rewarded. And my children should always be well behaved. See, Paul doesn't promise that. What he says in Romans chapter 8, he says, we ourselves, even though we have the first fruits of the Spirit, what he simply is saying is, even though maybe we follow Jesus, even those of us who are following Jesus in his way are believers, he says, even though we have the first fruits of the Spirit, we are amongst, what he says, the groaners, those that are frustrated, disappointed, but are still holding on to hope. How that translates to us is that maybe for some of us, you know, we may get fired. Maybe you've been fired. We get bankrupt or can go bankrupt. We get dumped. We've been hurt. Maybe you've betrayed. And Paul says that we are not exempt from suffering. But what he says is that when we're experiencing kind of frustration and disappointment with hope, see, Andy in the movie, that's what he was doing. He's traversing through the situation for years on end, frustrated maybe and disappointed, but he chose to lean into hope. Paul says, and he says this, he says, as we're frustrated and disappointed, we do it with hope. And he says in 8:23, he says, because we wait eagerly with inextinguishable perseverance. Inextinguishable perseverance. Because we're waiting for something or someone to do something, right? Dallas Willard, he's a great theologian that actually recently passed away. I love his books. He wrote this. He says, one of the remarkable changes brought on by Jesus and his people in the ancient world concerned the elevation, get this, the elevation of hope into a primary virtue. Hope was not well regarded by the Greco-Roman world. Hope was not well regarded by the Greco-Roman world. So if we think about what that simply means is that, see, the Greeks believed that hope was a setup for disappointment. I need to lower my expectations. If I believe in hope and use it as a primary virtue, then I'll be disappointed in life. This is kind of the position that Morgan Freeman, played the character Red in the movie, is, listen, hope is a dangerous thing. It will drive you insane. In essence, what he's saying is lower your expectation. But see, Jesus brought another story. Paul said from a Christian perspective, the ability to face the future with great confidence doesn't come from our ability to have great strength of character or even our giftedness. It comes from God and his grace. Here's what Paul goes on to say. He says, the creation itself is waiting in eager expectation for things to be set right. He says that he knows that the focal point of all things hoping all goes back to this one story. Many of us, and maybe all of us, know that story where 2,000 years ago, a group of people began to follow this rabbi named Jesus. And they invested their hopes and their futures in him. And then he was crucified and he died. And all their futures, they felt, died with him. And then on that third day, it's like they heard, you know, the screaming over the other side of the fence, where the Roman soldiers in some ways were saying, the rabbi, we sentenced him, we convicted him, we stripped him and beat him, we whipped him, we crucified him, we buried him 2 days ago, and now he's back. And Paul says, in this hope we can be saved. In this hope we are saved. So how do you keep hope alive? If we kind of get down to the nuts of, well, how do we keep hope alive in our everyday life? See, the first thing we need is a problem. Everyone say problem. Problem, right. Paul says this. He puts it like this to the Romans. He says that hope that is seen is not hope at all. I mean, if you think about what that simply means is that if we had everything without hoping for anything, I mean, we wouldn't need hope as a virtue or a part of our makeup, because we would always have it in front of us. Therefore, there's no reason, there's no need to grow. How many have at least one problem in their life? This isn't a trick question, right? How many does it look like the person sitting next to them has a problem this morning? Don't raise your hand. How many of you, you know, the person sitting next to you is your problem? No, don't. That'd be really bad. Don't send me a letter. So for the next few minutes, I want to kind of outline just real quick some key takeaways as we think about this movie, as we think about, real quick, three takeaways as we think about what are some lessons, as we think about Andy Dufresne, as we think about the lens in which Andy was looking through in regard to hope and how that integrates into our life, and the lens that Red was looking through and how he integrated some of his belief systems into his life and how that impacted how he worked through living in prison. The first one is this, that people of hope tell a different story. Let's say that together. People of hope tell a different story. That's right. See, in the movie, the hero, Andy Dufresne, he initially underwhelms the narrator, Red. Red goes on to, he says this in the movie. He says, "I must admit, I didn't think much of Andy the first time I laid eyes on him. He looked like a stiff breeze could blow him over." See, Dufresne, Andy is unjustly arrested, tried, condemned, and beaten. This is Andy. But as we watch through Red's eyes, something like wonder begins to grow. See, in a brutal world, Andy is kind. He creates a library that helps his captors with their taxes. He builds this library also to help educate those that are in prison to get their degree. He has this hidden strength. He's anxious for nothing. Or as Red says, he strolls like a man in a park without a care or a worry. Wow. It's the same thing as we parallel it to the scriptures. The Apostle Paul, he writes to the church of Philippi and he says to them, in essence, like, you can tell a different story. People of hope, they tell a different story. And in your story, this is what Paul says to those that are being, that are suffering for Christ's sake. He says to them, do not be anxious about anything. Now that sounds really nice. You've seen that embroidered, you know, maybe a little thing on the wall or what have you, or someone's bumper sticker, don't be anxious for anything. But Paul wants them to see that there is a reality that you can live in. He says, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything. Everyone say everything. Everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. See, people of hope learned to allow anxious feelings to prompt them to pray. What Paul is saying is that there's a new option in the human condition. See, when concerns begin to crop up, because they will crop up, and maybe some of you are thinking about some concerns right now, it's easy to think thoughts like, if I don't get what I want here, I'll never be happy. Or, if I don't succeed at this project, I'll always be a failure. I'm afraid about money.
I'm afraid about my health. I'm afraid about being alone. I'm afraid for not or maybe not measuring up in life. And it robs us, right? Instead, what we find ourselves as we begin to give into anxious thoughts, as we begin to give into that we live with regret about the past, we're preoccupied with the present, and we live with anxiousness about the future. And it robs us of our life. God calls us to a different kind of life. It's recalibrating, refocusing our beliefs, if you will. And for Andy, this was the case. As you watch the movie, he chose to look through a different lens. In the midst of the same suffering, and in some cases, maybe more suffering, because he was different. He, maybe instead for some of us, it's recalibrating our belief system and our thoughts to think thoughts like, you know what, God in this situation is hovering over this situation. Maybe for some of us, maybe it's thinking thoughts like, you know what, because of the finished work of Jesus Christ, what that simply means is what Jesus did was enough. What that simply means is that because of that, that I am not separated from God's love. What it simply means is recalibrating our thoughts to say, God, you're present in this situation. Regardless of what's going on around me, I can have hope. People of hope. People of hope, we could tell a different story. The second thing is that people of hope learn the power of freedom and letting go. Let's say that together. People of hope learn the power of freedom and letting go. So here you have Andy Dufresne. He ascends kind of to this high place in Shawshank, doing odd jobs for the warden's office, and one day he decides to play Mozart. If you've seen the movie, it's a great part of the movie. He locks himself in one of the like the top offices overlooking like the prison yard. And he locks himself in there, and he finds this record, and he puts it on there, and he plays Mozart, and you've got these like opera singers in the background that you really couldn't tell what they were singing about. And there's a great part in the movie as it's playing over the intercom. It's kind of a transcendent moment in the movie. Every prisoner stands motionless in unexpected glory. And Red confesses, this is what he says, I love this. He says, the voices soared higher and farther than anybody in a gray place dares to dream. Because for the briefest of moments, every man at Shawshank felt free. Have you ever felt those transcendent moments where you kind of move beyond failure of the past, of pain, maybe of comfort? Sometimes I think it's very easy, to stay with me here for a second. Sometimes I think it's very easy at times also to hold on to our past. We get used to those invisible shackles that are holding us prisoner because it doesn't allow us to take risks, and maybe we're okay with that place of comfort and those invisible shackles. The character Red, played by Morgan Freeman, in the movie, he speaks of the fear of freedom. The fear of freedom. And one, as he says, has been prisoner too long. This is what he says. It's powerful. He says about the walls in which he lives within Shawshank, living for over there for 20, 30 years. He says this. At first, these walls, you hate them. They make you crazy. But after a while, you get used to them, don't notice them anymore. And then comes the day you realize you need them. See, sometimes we complain about the shackles, but we're okay with staying in that space of comfort and not risking because it's easier to do that. We're used to dealing with pain. Maybe because we feel the sense of control. And if I don't let this go, if I let this go, then I won't be in control. Maybe that as people of hope, as we look to the scriptures, as we look through Andy, who chose to forgive and to let it go and to move past even those that falsely accused him. I think as individuals, we're so used to being in control of certain things in our life. Classic writers on the spiritual life used to refer to this notion of letting go of the past as what they call as a detachment, of detachment. And what that means is it's not like we kind of go in neutral or we become like emotional zombies or what have you. What it means is that we lean into and are committed to being rich toward God. And I seek to be free from this sense of trying to control things around me. Paul put it like this. He says, Jesus put it like this. He says, who of you by worrying can add a single hour to your life? We feel like by worrying that we're in control, right? Have you ever like heard a message? I mean, I've talked on, you know, taught messages on worry and anxiousness, and the more you heard about not worrying, you shouldn't be worrying, is like the more you worried, right? But here Jesus is saying, you know, trying to feel in control of a situation adds these burdens to you. Let the control go. Let it go. How many like bowling in here? It's not a trick question, all right? How many have been bowling before? All right, most of the people in here, everyone else is still trying to figure it out. But what's interesting, a few weeks ago, I went bowling with two other families, our family and two other families went bowling. And how many in here like to people watch? Like, I love people. Like, I'm watching you right now, and it's really fun up here. I wish you could see from my perspective. But that's a whole nother talk. But in any case, I remember a few weeks ago, it's so interesting to watch people while, you know, it wasn't my turn to bowl, is to watch people across the lanes while they're bowling. Because here's what happens. Next time you're bowling, watch this. Once people let go of the ball, and maybe this is you, all of a sudden, people began to talk to the ball. They threaten the ball. Come on, baby. Come on, baby. Don't make me come down there. You know, they kind of hop on one foot. Come on, come on, come on, come on. Like waving at the ball, contorting their body, as if doing all that will kind of control the ball. It has some magical power. Don't look at me. You're one of them. Let's just be honest, okay? It does work. It does, all right? There is magic. But don't ruin my illustration. Seriously, don't. See, when I bowl, there are certain things that I can do before the ball leaves my hand. I work on my footwork. I work on my aim. As you can say, I'm not a bowler. Like, not at all, but I'm just making this up as I go. So, like, you can work on certain things. But the moment you let go of that ball, the moment you cross that foul line, that dotted line, and you let go of that ball, it's gone. It's out of your control. See, my part is done. See, let me tell you about the secret of joy-filled bowling. When you let the ball go, let it go, all right? See, she or he agrees. The reality about your life is there's many things you are in control of. And I think that notion of control can be intoxicating at times, right? It can be very intoxicating. But what happens is, in some ways, we begin to lug around a bunch of bowling balls that we're never created to carry. And maybe God says, will you just put that down? Maybe I would say to you, where is God telling you to put it down, to let it go? Maybe for some of you this morning, maybe you're trying to control someone in your life. It's your kids, your marriage, maybe a relationship at work, a coworker. Maybe it's a boss. Maybe you're worried about an outcome at work. And God is just saying, will you just love them? Will you just let them go and quit trying to worry about outcomes? Maybe you've been preoccupied with finances or whether you're going to be successful or if you're going to fail at something. And you've been living without joy and without peace, and it's robbing you of your relationships and living in community. It's not allowing you to serve maybe the way that God has intended you to serve. And maybe God is just saying, would you just let this go? Just simply let it go. And maybe that's a step for you this morning. Is God just saying to you, just quit worrying about this project of your life and just let it go? See, there's a people of hope, these people of hope, and that's you and me. Let it go. Learn the art of letting things go. The last point I want to talk about this morning for a moment, I think one of the most important points of all, is people of hope remember redemption. People of hope remember redemption. See, redemption in the story, Shawshank Redemption, makes it this beautiful story. Redemption occurs as a result of a resurrection. Jesus' life included a death, you know, and also a resurrection, who also brought about redemption. You think about resurrection, it's a powerful thought. I read a story a few weeks ago about a pastor. It was a children's pastor, and he was trying to tell a group of kids, kind of the children's kind of kids area about the first words or the word that Jesus used to, when he was resurrected from the dead. What were Jesus' words? He asked them, he says, what were the first words that Jesus used after he was raised from the dead? What were his first words? And so he's about to tell them what it was, and all of a sudden, this girl from the back of the room shot her hand up, and she goes, I know. So he deferred to her and said, well, what were the first words that Jesus used when he was raised from the dead? She says, I know. He said, ta-da! That's in the Hebrew and the Greek. You need to look that up. It's profound. It's translated greetings. No. But resurrection leads to redemption. Redemption is what makes hope so beautiful and so alive in us. And Paul says, there is a hope that does not disappoint. We talked about at the beginning that when we hope in something, those somethings, probably not correct grammar, somethings will fail, but hope in someone, in this case, something deeper, hope in Christ, something that lasts. And that's why Paul says, there is a hope that does not disappoint. Hope. It's the focus on hope and redemption in the second half that makes Shawshank Redemption the powerful film that it is. Now that Andy's hope is revealed, it gets tested to its limits and has, you know, a chances for exoneration. Andy has his chance for exoneration, and it vanishes in a flash of gunfire, and his circumstances become more dire. And because of that, as you're watching this film, and because of that, our perspective, which stems from the narrator, Red, whose worldview is full of bitterness and pessimism, we're convinced that Andy is ready to go the way of his friend and maybe take his own life. Yet, what we find out in the final analysis instead is that we've underestimated the power of hope. Andy is not ready to quit, but to take the ultimate step, crawling through 500 yards of human feces, he breaks out of prison to freedom, washed clean in the river and rain on the other side. Redemption. To Red, hope is a dangerous thing. To Andy, who held on to hope and now saw the manifestation of that hope revealed, experienced redemption. What does that mean for us? The Apostle Paul, he writes to the churches throughout the scriptures, two-thirds of the New Testament, he writes to them about this Rabbi Jesus who came to set the prisoners free, had now triumphed over death, but death is the way to life. In the movie Shawshank Redemption, Red finds out paradoxically that after Andy had escaped, that when he leaves the prison, he's allowed to leave the prison after like 30-something years of being in prison. A life without hope, he finds out, cannot be sustained. And so his options before him are to take his life, to commit suicide, or to commit some type of crime, to go back into what he's familiar with. But he remembered, except that he had made a promise to his friend Andy. And he does what Andy had asked, and at the foot of a tree, Red finds that his friend had paid, if you will, out of treasure Andy acquired through suffering, for Red to join him off the coast of Mexico, free and full of hope. Red discovers that hope, all of a sudden, is a good thing, maybe the best of things. Take a look at this scene.
Dear Red, if you're reading this, you've gotten out. And if you've come this far, maybe you're willing to come a little further. You remember the name of the town, don't you?
Zihuatanejo.
I could use a good man to help me get my project on wheels. I'll keep an eye out for you and the chessboard ready. Remember, Red, hope is a good thing, maybe the best of things, and no good thing ever dies. I will be hoping that this letter finds you and finds you well. Your friend, Andy.
So in the final images, we see Andy, Red's friend, dressed in white. Andy's rehabbing a fishing boat at the edge of a long coastline next to the blue Pacific. And Red's narration closes the movie with this. I am so excited I can barely sit still or hold a thought in my head. I hope I can make it across the border. I hope to see my friend and shake his hand. I hope the Pacific is as blue as it has been in my dreams. I hope. You see, we are people of hope. Our ability to endure, to persevere, to overcome is fueled by hope. And everything as individuals that drives us, every effort to succeed, every attempt to be significant, every moment to pursue a dream, advance a cause, whatever it is worth and is part of an act of hope. Maybe in my closing words, I leave you with this, in the words of Red and Andy, who says, let's get busy living, or let's get busy dying. Let's stand and pray. Father, we thank you for your kindness and goodness to us, God, this morning. That those of us that maybe have come in here that we're full of anxiousness, maybe we're dealing with suffering, maybe we're dealing with pains and hurts from the past, maybe we're in the midst of traversing through some very big frustrating points and disappointments, God, we thank you that we could hold on to hope. You said that hope does not disappoint. Father, we thank you for those that are in the room this morning. Help them to experience your peace in the midst of suffering, your grace in the midst of anxiousness. Help them to see and understand that hope is a possibility, and it is truly the best of things. We are a people of hope. You have allowed us to have confidence in you, and because of that, we can be people of hope. God, we thank you that each one of us are designed with hope and by hope. We thank you for this morning as we leave today, that we look through a different lens as Andy did. And we began to see that the world around us, we can traverse and move through as people of hope. In Jesus' name, and everyone said, amen.